This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to meet Ben Alaloof, the Naples snowbird, who will be featured on an episode of a PBS TV show that connects people separated by time. In this case, it was two kids who first met as refugees in the wake of World War II. But first, the South Florida Water Management District's governing board recently voted to extend a lease to allow farming to continue on about 16,000 acres of state-owned land that's going to be used to build the EAA, or Everglades Agricultural Area, reservoir. The decision came quickly without advance public input. Some environmental groups, like the Everglades Foundation, immediately decried the move, saying that it will delay construction of the much-needed reservoir and that the vote was taken without enough advance public notice. We had the Everglades Foundation CEO Eric Eichenberg on the show last Wednesday, and we had invited the Water Management District to join that show but didn't hear back until afterwards. So today, we're going to hear from the district to get their side of this story. We're joined by the district's general counsel, Brian Accardo. Brian, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Julie.
We're also joined by its director of communications, Jerry Eisenband. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live, and thanks for your time.
Pleasure, Julie.
And we're also joined by John Mitnick. He is the chief engineer for the South Florida Water Management District. John, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Julie.
As always, we like to hear your voice with questions or comments. To join our conversation, the number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Jerry Eisenband, the director of communications, can you explain the decision to extend the lease to Florida Crystals and how that came about?
Well, actually, the best thing to talk about, for my particular knowledge on this, Julie, is this is a project that brings home the EAA Reservoir. You know, obviously, your own constituents over there, your listeners, they've been plagued by discharges. People have been crying, we need to send the water south. And the expedition of the EAA Reservoir project is what this is really about. Now, the particular release, I'll turn it over to our general counsel, Brian Accardo, since he is the lawyer of this group and he has those details.
All right, we'll send it over there, and I think we might have a better connection there. Brian, could you take it away?
Sure, Julie. You know, the goal of the presentation, ultimately the board's vote, was to marry what John Mitnick and his team needs to do construction and design-wise with what the Florida legislature told us the district had to do legally. And that's what we think we've done with this new lease. I'm sure you and your listeners are familiar with the terms, the key terms of this. This is an 8-year lease, and this lease can be terminated after 2 years to provide for more expeditious construction of the reservoir. But those first 2 years, we are limited to what we can do on the land, which is why we carved out 560 acres altogether out of the lease, so that we could do the type of work we expect site work-wise while we're designing the project. And, of course, John can tell you, but I think an optimistic time frame for designing this project is 2 years.
All right, so I have a question. Did you ever consider not extending that lease? Was that on the table?
It wasn't on the table, at least it's not on the table in 2018. We did look after the legislation in 2017 about whether we had to tackle that lease in 2017, and what happened was we sat on it long enough that the legislature met again, and the legislature passed a new law in 2018 that says we will do this, and so we did that.
So are you saying that you were legally obligated to extend this lease?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question that you can go to the laws of Florida, and that's Chapter 2018-10 and Section 72, and it says that we will enter into a lease that allows the continuation of farming so long as we're not ready to move dirt on that project.
Huh. Okay, so last week we had Eric Eichenberg, the CEO of the Everglades Foundation, on the show, as I'm sure you heard. We wanted to get you all on at the same time, but of course that didn't work out then, and now we have all three of you. But I wanted to play some clips from that interview so I can get your responses to those clips today. And the first one outlines his primary complaints, so let's go ahead and hear that now.
The original proposal that was offered in 2017 by Senate President Joe Negron,
who was Senate Bill 10?
Senate Bill 10, a champion of this effort, was on 60,000 acres. 60,000 acres within that EAA. As the process moved through Tallahassee, the sugar industry was not willing to be a willing seller. and to provide land for this critical project, and instead the legislature had to revert to state-owned land, taxpayer-owned land within the EAA. That's where the 16,000 acres comes into play.
So the land we're talking about that's going to become this reservoir is land that's already owned by the state.
That's correct.
And it had been being leased by sugar farmers.
Yes. The lease was signed many, many years ago. The expiration date on this particular lease, the 16,000 acres in question, March 31st of 2019. So again, as this passed unanimously in the Florida Senate, 99 votes in the Florida House, Congress, President Trump signing this bill, it was moving towards having that land available come April of next year. Land that could be utilized for a temporary storage project. This same water management district is quick to give money away for dispersed water management, short-term storage. These 16,000 acres certainly could be used in the interim for that purpose.
It could be. It doesn't require infrastructure to get that rolling?
You know, you have earthen berms. You put some berms around to hold water on a land. You put a pump on this property to allow water to be diverted to this 16,000 acres. Be in the driver's seat. The Water Management District has state law, legislation that says once Congress authorizes it and the president signs it, you shall begin the design and construction of this reservoir. Once that's happening, put a temporary project there. Put an interim storage plan in place and utilize the taxpayer land for good.
Well, you talk about all. So General Counsel Brian Accardo, I want to ask you to respond to those comments. Is there any possibility of that land having been used for a short-term storage solution?
Right. So I think there are two aspects of that I need to address. And the first is I didn't hear any discussion of the 2018 law. Right, so the 2018 law specifically directs the district to enter into a new lease on those lands. But the second part is the idea of interim use. The legislature debated interim use, and an interim water storage project, I get it, makes plenty of sense. It's not a bad idea. It's not bad public policy, but it was debated. And it was debated in the legislature, and the legislature landed on the side of the interim use will be agricultural use. And that's what's reflected in both the 2017 and 2018 law, and that's what's reflected in our lease. And I really should have John weigh in here, because while that's a policy decision, it also makes good sense for what we need to do in the interim while we're planning and designing this massive water infrastructure project.
That's exactly what I was planning to do. I'm going to send it over to John Mitnick. You're the chief engineer for the South Florida Water Management District. It sounds like the proposed dimensions of the reservoir changed a lot from 2017 to now. So I want to know, what kind of impacts does that have on the reservoir's efficacy and safety, for that matter? I mean, it sounds like it was supposed to be a lot bigger.
Yeah, from a safety perspective, what we're talking about building on that 16,000 or roughly 16,000, I think it's actually slightly larger than the 16,000 acres, is a 10,000-acre reservoir and a 6,500-acre stormwater treatment area immediately adjacent to it. The reservoir itself will be 23 feet deep, so I think the dam itself around that reservoir to hold that much water will be on the order of 35 to 40 feet tall. As you can imagine, it's a massive water resources infrastructure project. In looking at how the Water Management District has stepped through a similar reservoir over on the Caloosahatchee River, the C-43 West Storage Basin Reservoir, the way we've approached that project is try to do the design and construction all at the same time, much the same way as what we're talking about doing with the EAA reservoir. We're focused on building the reservoir and taking all of those steps and getting it designed while we're building pieces of it as you move along. So we have a number of different construction efforts going on over on the C-43 site while we're still finishing up the design of that project, all in an effort to crunch that timeline down, expedite its construction, and get it in the ground and serving the people of Florida.
Well, I'm wondering, would it have been better to have 60,000 acres to work with, that which was originally planned, instead of 16?
Well, Julie, this is Brian. I guess I need to jump in and say that that's really the compromise legislation, is that it can be debated, and I guess that was debated up in Tallahassee during legislative session, but where the legislature landed was on this project, the one that we're trying to expedite now.
I'm guessing if you had more land to use, then you could use, it wouldn't have to be as deep, you wouldn't have to build as great large size tall walls, exactly, you know what I'm saying?
Right, this is Brian again. Yes, it would be a different project. It's just not the project that was compromised in Tallahassee.
All right. Okay, well, Mr. Eichenberg's other main complaint had to do with what he considered a lack of transparency, so I want to give a quick listen to that.
On this lease issue, it expired in March of next year. To not have this process laid out for the public to see, to not have a transparent discussion about this particular lease, that's what's most troubling. Reasonable people can understand how you can move forward on this project itself, but to do this in the dark of night, to change the agenda less than 12 hours before they convene that meeting in Miami, a remote location at the University of Miami, not even at the Water Management District.
Really?
And to do this in the setting that they did, they rebuffed the governor-elect of Florida and a U.S. sitting congressman who was in person asking that the item to be pulled. They voted unanimously to move forward, not the will of the taxpayer.
So I want to ask you to respond to that. Is it normal that the agenda gets amended so late and the meeting moved to a different location?
Thank you, Jerry, Communications Director. So the first thing I just wanted to delve into real quick is we've heard, obviously, that this board meeting took place down there in Miami. And, of course, we're 16 counties. That's where the South Florida Water Management District represents. So we have constituents from every year, from everywhere. So what we try to do is we hear from our constituents that they want to be part. They want their voices heard, so we do traveling meetings. We try to keep it to one every quarter. So the reason why this particular item was there, it came about at that time, but we were in Miami because it was already on our agenda to be down there to hear from those constituents that live in that region. And from there, I'll turn it over to Brian to answer the second part of that.
So you move the meeting around normally because you cover a large area and different people want to have the meetings held in their neighborhood, make it a little easier for them to get to it, I imagine?
Absolutely. I mean, we hear from people all the time, whether it be through our social media accounts, whether it be different meetings that we attend, that people want a voice. They want us to come down there. They want to be represented. And it's very tough for people, particularly even on the West Coast, to come all the way down to the headquarters in West Palm Beach. So we're very cognizant of that. And we want to hear from the public constantly. We want that feedback. So by having those meetings take place at different corners of the district, it just helps with the public discourse.
All right. So then I'll go to Brian then for the other part of the question, which is what happened with the agenda? Why did it pop up on the agenda at the last minute?
Well, we actually got the lease finalized with terms acceptable to the district the night before, and that's just how it happened this time. It's not usual, but it's not incredibly unusual. We set the agenda item. The first agenda is published the week before the meeting, and we marked on that agenda that there would be this discussion, and we cited to all the legal authorities that we would be discussing, and we just wanted to keep working on the lease until it was something that was acceptable. And earlier in that week, the week of, it wasn't. And as a matter of fact, on Tuesday, I got a call from a lawyer representing the environmental advocates, and she asked me what was going on. And I said, look, I'm negotiating a lease, and if I land it before Thursday, we'll bring it for a board vote. If I don't land it, I won't. And it landed on Thursday night or Wednesday night.
But that lease was not supposed to expire until March of next year. And there are a few meetings between now and then. Is there any reason that it had to rush through that week instead of just wait till the next meeting?
Julie, that's a very good question. And really what it comes down to is if we amended that lease on that Thursday meeting, then we were freeing up the 560 acres, and freeing up the 560 acres in November of 2018 was absolutely critical to us moving rock in the dry season, right? So in the winter months, there's less rain, and we have less water in our storage basins where we have a lot of rock, and so we needed to get that done so that we could do this work, because there's really not a lot of work that can be done construction-wise while you're planning and designing the reservoir. But moving rock and quarrying rock and doing geotechnical investigations, we can do that work, and we wanted to start that work in the dry season.
Okay, you kind of lost me there a little bit. You mentioned a lot of other acres that I don't know what you're talking about, because what I figured was this is a lease about 16,000 acres, right?
Right.
Yes, and then you're talking about these other acres that you're moving rocks on. I don't understand how that correlates. That's part of this actual lease?
Okay. I'm sorry for not being clear.
Oh, that's okay.
The existing leases that were set to expire next spring would have precluded this work. So in developing a new lease that would extend for the duration of the construction project, we carved out land that was currently under lease and that the district didn't have access to. And that's the 560 acres that were carved out with the governing board's approval at that meeting. And then we were able to start doing work on that 560 acres.
So these 560 acres are not part of the EAA?
They are. They're within the footprint of the project. They are pulled out of leasing. And that was part of what the governing board considered and voted on that November.
So you were moving rocks on this last week after that vote, because I remember getting the news release about that. So is that one of these temporary solutions to try to expedite things so we don't end up with these releases to the east and west?
Yes, Julie, this is John. Absolutely. As I talked about the C-43 reservoir a moment ago, how there were a number of different construction activities that were running in parallel to the design efforts, moving this material from where it is currently located to the 560-acre parcel that Brian was referring to is absolutely part of that. It allows us to get that material where it needs to be and position it for the construction of the not only just the reservoir, but also the stormwater treatment area. And getting that activity started now at the beginning of the dry season just allows us to be more productive and more efficient in moving that material from where it is and pre-positioning for that construction of the reservoir and stormwater treatment area over on the A2 parcel.
Okay, I'm going to summarize this just really quickly with my understanding of it to make sure that I've got it right and that our listeners are getting it too. So this lease, this extension of a 16,000-acre land lease liberated several hundred thousand other acres that you're able to use for the more immediate removal of some of this water.
Julie, this is Brian, and that is correct.
Okay.
By amending the lease, we carved out 560 acres that we could get started on working right now.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I don't mean to be so simple about it, but I just want to make sure I get it. If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Brian Accardo. He is the general counsel for the South Florida Water Management District. Also, Jerry Eisenband, he's the district's director of communication, and John Mitnick, he's the district's chief engineer. We're learning about plans for the so-called EAA reservoir and how the district's recent decision to extend the lease on about 16,000 of acres of farmland that's intended for the reservoir. We're learning about the impacts of that. And if you'd like to weigh in on our conversation, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And we do have a couple of people on the phone that want to ask a couple of questions. So let's go to Mike in Punta Gorda. Mike, you've been very patient. What would you like to ask?
Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm doing good.
So I more a general question. I'm fortunate to sit on the RAC for South Florida Water Management District. And in the past, I was a big critic of theirs. And being involved and watching at the rate at which they work, I have to say, of all the government agencies I have worked with in the past, the district's ability to move this project forward at lightning speed is, I say lightning speed, but considering the way other projects work, they're usually pretty slow. The fact that the Everglades Foundation CEO was on your radio show last week, and I listened to the recordings suggesting that there's something nefarious going on or some attempt to delay or stymie the production of the EAA reservoir is a little hypocritical, and I wondered why it wasn't touched on either last week or this week, the fact that the Everglades Foundation is the reason that the EAA reservoir isn't completed now. The reservoir should have been done 10 years ago, if not for lawsuits from the same organization who's crying a foul today. And I wondered if those issues were discussed or if you were able to mention those or if the CEO mentioned them last week.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate your calling in. And I wanted to ask Brian Accardo, does the board consider optics and how things look sometimes? I mean, because moving this through pretty quickly came as a shock to a lot of people who may not understand. I mean, this is a pretty intricate lease contract.
It's really scary if I could jump in there.
Well, Jerry, I can barely hear you. Are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Give me 1 second.
You're a lot clearer now.
All right. Thank you. So the way it is, the governing board, you have to understand, this is a panel of volunteers. And at the end of the day, they want one thing only. They want to bring home the EAA reservoir project, you know, that's going to reduce estuary discharges by 60%, take clean water and send it south. You know, so when they look at the optics and, you know, yes, you put it out there, people have said it. They're not looking at that to say, hey, we have one goal in mind. We need to expedite this project. And if that means doing exactly following Florida law, following that to expedite the project, you know, they're willing to take a hit and look and say, hey, you know what, people are upset at this. They want more debate. But it's about not delaying the project. That's the way they look at it. They envision, they made a promise to Rick Scott when he appointed them that they needed to finish this project and help the estuaries, to help the people that have come before the board at each and every turn and beg them to do something about the economy. So they look at it as, hey, we have to vote. We cannot delay any action. You've heard Brian talk about why the wet season was critical and carving out a piece of farmland, you know, that was in production. Now it is not in production. Why it's so important to this project.
So I wanted to ask, one of the points that has been brought up is that this lease extension is potentially going to slow down construction of the reservoir itself. Will it?
Julie, this is Brian. It absolutely will not. That this lease agreement that the governing board entered into on November 8th allows us to start work. And as you pointed out, we started that work last week.
So there's a guaranteed 24 months before the land can be used for the reservoir?
There is 20 months before we can put in notice, and that's a 4 months notice, so that we can start constructing a larger reservoir. And that is consistent with our design plans, which we think optimistically it will take 2 years. There's only so much site work you can do while you're designing this project. And we picked a parcel within the footprint that's pretty much in the center of the property. So when we see in the future where we start construction based on what portion we do, what portion the federal government does, we're ready to go. We've already have rock that we can start building an embankment.
All right. And we have another call coming in. This is Robert in Fort Myers. And Robert is a boater, so has some pretty direct relationship with the water that you see out there in the Gulf and in the inland waters. Robert, what was your question that you'd like to ask?
Sure, thanks. Their assurances that this isn't going to delay the project, that they have to comply with the law and all that, just aren't credible. The fact is, they know how important this issue is to the people of Florida, and yet they deliberately engaged in secret negotiations with Big Sugar to extend the lease and only gave a few hours' notice to the public before the meeting. The lease doesn't end until March, so why didn't they have a month of sunshine and discussion and then make a vote in December? It would still give them plenty of time. Why is every activist organization skeptical and rejecting of what they're saying? It can't be one, both sides can't be wrong. And why should we believe an organization that is engaged in, has a history of accommodating U.S. Sugar and where money has been paid to politicians to promote Big Sugar's cause? Why wouldn't we want to believe the scientists?
All right. Thank you, Robert, for your question. And, Brian, I guess I'll give that to you. We kind of already answered that a little bit. But if you could give boaters like Robert an answer to that, because there is some skepticism about how things came together the night before a meeting. It hopped on the agenda and it got passed so quickly. So could you maybe briefly summarize what we talked about earlier about the reason for the expediency?
Yes, thank you, Julie. Julie, there was 2017 law, there was 2018 law. Following that law, we engaged in these negotiations. Nothing secret about that. Talking to our state agencies about what we're doing, answering the phone when people call me and ask, the negotiations are just like anything else we do at the district. We're working on it. And if you just, you may not know what's on my desk right now, right? Dozens and dozens of things that are on my desk. That doesn't make it a secret. So that's what we're doing, and we're getting it done as quickly as possible. And our plan got things done such that John and our field ops crew could be out there last week working.
So, I mean, you got the thing passed. You liberated the other several hundred thousand acres. Would it have been terrible to wait 1 month and maybe kind of let people feel this agreement out before voting on it?
I guess it would just would be inconsistent with doing everything we can to move fast.
Okay, I see your point. We have another question coming from Richard in Fort Myers. Richard, what would you like to ask?
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest regarding who was on that panel that met, or that, I don't know if you call it a panel or a board
the,
meeting.
The Water Management District.
Exactly. Pardon?
The Water Management District. It's the governing board of the South Florida Water Management District.
Well, I'd like to know the names of the folks that met, and were they legislators? And when they talk about with it being within the law, it's almost as if your guest is stating that they had cover because they weren't breaking any laws, even though the notification of the public and the usual procedures for that weren't met. And there was also, a while back, there was, I think, there was quite a bit of money, I can't remember the number, that was allocated for the development at first. That money just disappeared and evaporated. And I'd like to know if the board was a part of that, the Water Management Board.
That's a really good question, Richard, because, you know, we often hear, thank you, Richard, for your question. I appreciate it. We often hear the governing board. Who is the board? You said that they were volunteers you mentioned earlier, I think, Jerry?
Yes. They're all volunteers from different parts of the 16 counties that make up the district, and they take a lot of their personal time.
So who are these? Are they kind of like landowners? Are they business owners, legislators?
They're a little bit of everything. You know, we have people with degree. We have engineer on the board. We have some farmers on the board. We have lawyers on the board. It's part of law. If you actually, I'll put Brian back on. He can delve into a little more.
You know, Julie, I think people fail to realize that the Florida law provides for the type of individuals that are supposed to be on the board. They're supposed to represent a geographic cross-section of our 16 counties, and they do, and they're supposed to represent a cross-section of professional experience, including agriculture, including the development industry, including people with accounting degrees. This is exactly what the law requires of our board members, and that's who these folks are.
You know, we talk a lot about water planning and water management here on the show, and it's become a huge topic this year, especially in light of the blue-green algae thing and then the red tide that happened at the same time. It's been a tough year, and there's it seems like, and we heard it in the phone conversation, people's, you know, the public's patience is sort of, you know, being tested. I wonder, what's on the horizon? What's next? I mean, are we going to see a solution to this at any point? Because it kind of hasn't really felt like it.
Well, I think you're making the case for no delay. Let's go and let's build. Let's do exactly what we started to do last week. But we all know that the restoration projects, and these are massive projects in scope and money, these restoration projects, they don't get you all the way to where the coastal estuaries need you to be to have zero discharges. And that's why there are interim solutions, because these restoration projects are going to take years and years and tremendous amounts of funding. And that's when our board talks about things like dispersed water projects or talks about emergency estuary protection wells and these sort of interim measures to fill the gaps.
This is the filling the gaps. I mean, I think we've been talking about this for, what, 10, 15 years? And there's been a lot of money going towards this, and it just seems like the problems continue to get worse.
Well, you know, a lot of money has been spent on this, and it's a lot of state money. And I think what you're seeing is the effects of when the federal government falls so far behind in their 50-50 cost share of comprehensive restoration. I mean, they're about $1 billion behind right now. And as this water management district continues to move forward on the C-43 reservoir, which is that very large storage impoundment in Hendry County that'll help the Caloosahatchee estuary. As we move forward to that, the federal government's falling more and more behind, more than $1 billion behind.
Mm-hmm. We have another person on the phone from Bonita. This is Mark who has a question. Mark, what would you like to ask?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you guys just started to get into exactly what I was calling about. I, too, sit on the RAC, Water Resources Analysis Coalition, and started about 2 years ago and really got my eyes wide opened. And what is truly disturbing, and I think most of the public is not aware of this, the state of Florida has put up all kinds of money, and they were just speaking to that issue, to go ahead and take care of things that are not even our responsibility, or to step up and take care of a full project where the federal government is supposed to be a 50-50 partner, as was just stated. And I wonder if we could spend a little bit more time on this, because quite frankly, what really hits me a lot when I'm having discussions with the public is the comment that, well, they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything is so totally inaccurate, it's not even funny. There are 68, 69 projects sitting on the list in some stage of development, planning, or whatever else. A lot of it is awaiting the funding from the federal government so that they can go ahead and be done.
I wonder if that bill that was... I wonder, Brian, is the bill that was just signed, the water projects bill that just happened a couple weeks ago, is that something that will impact the funding of a lot of these projects?
No, Julie. Unfortunately, it's at least a two-step process with the federal government. The first is to get authorized projects, and that's what you saw several weeks ago when President Trump signed it into law. And the second step is to have Congress appropriate money for the project. And I say two-and-a-half-step process because it looks to be that there's a new half-step process before the federal government can appropriate money, and that's to have have the federal administration, the Office of Management and Budget, bless an already approved project.
All right. And, Mark, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to have cut you off. Did you have another primary question?
That's quite fine. I guess the point is what I think our public needs to understand, and unfortunately I don't think this has been something that the press has picked up on and promoted enough, is to understand that whether it's the Army Corps or the South Florida Water Management District, these folks implement to a large extent the policies that they're handed by the people that are in the legislature. It's not the issues that they raise definitely by themselves. And my own personal view, and I believe this because I see it every day when I'm dealing with these folks, is that they are hamstrung to the extent that they've got a whole lot of work that they would be doing right now if they could only get the federal government to step up and pick up their portion. Mentioned this a few minutes ago was the Caloosahatchee Reservoir, which is commonly referred to as the C-43. That reservoir is misunderstood in our area in a very big way because, for the most part, it's designed to take care of water releases during the winter when it's dry and the Caloosahatchee gets way too much salinity and it kills the grass. But the problem was, while the district and the state were ready to get going, there was no federal matching funds.
Mm-hmm.
So Scott and the legislature stepped up, and they're paying for the whole darn thing and pushing, if I'm not mistaken, and the gentleman can correct me if I'm wrong, but they're pushing the federal government's involvement in that project to another project down the line because there's no money from the feds here. And it's like this with just about everything they seem to be working with. They're either delayed or they're not getting the funds, and the state is coming up with it. You guys need to speak to Legacy Florida legislation, and where is that money coming from, and who's paying for it? Florida residents are picking up a whole lot, Florida taxpayers, a whole lot of what should be the United States government's requirement. Remember one thing. Everybody should know. You can go back to the late 1840s when Florida, the state of Florida, was given South Florida by the United States government. It was not part of the state of Florida until that point in time. And the requirement of the law was that the state step up and drain the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And you go
Mark,
read the legislation, understand it's been required all along. So
thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it, Mark. That was a wealth of knowledge there from Mark. Brian, does any of that make sense to you? Is that some of the same kind of things that you hear?
Yes, I think it's pretty clear that the comprehensive restoration of the Everglades system, which is necessary to bring more water south, prevent discharges to the estuary, it's a state-federal project. And like I mentioned earlier, the federal government is just simply behind. And what you have with the EAA reservoir is the state committing to spend $800 million. And that is a lot of money. And that goes back to the compromise we talked about. I mean, legislators all across our state had to say, yes, $800 million, we are going to spend that south of Lake Okeechobee and forego other projects. But that's only half of it. For this reservoir to get built in time, the federal government needs to show up with the other half.
You know, I'm running down on time, so unfortunately, I'm going to have to, you know, thank you all and let you all go. But do you have any final thoughts you want to share with us before we set you free?
Hey, Julie, it's Jerry. You know, the one thing that we've heard from people, whether they're angry or whether they support what we do, is that there's a lot of information out there, and people need access to that information. So for all your listeners, if you've never been to our website, sfwnd.gov, I'm going to give a plug to the website because all the information, when we talk about disparity between state funding and federal funding, it's right there on the homepage. It'll take you right there. If you want to investigate how fast we've moved since Governor Scott signed this legislation for Senate Bill 10, take a look. We have a website tracker to keep every constituent along with us on the process until we get that federal funding, until we start building this thing to fruition. So it's all up on the website. If your listeners have any more questions, go to our Facebook site. Ask a question. We get back to everyone. We just want to help. We just want to give the public some more information so they can see, to your point, Julie, that, hey, a lot of money has been spent. What has been done? We're trying. And this governing board really is committed to not delaying and to going forward and to getting this project to make South Florida a better place to live.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And we have a link to your website on our website at gulfcoastlive.org. So if anybody would like to track down some of their own information and do their own little version of journalism, then go ahead and do that research. It's all out there. But I want to thank you guys for joining us. Brian Accardo, he's the general counsel for the South Florida Water Management District. Jerry Eisenband, director of communications at the South Florida Water Management District, and also John Mitnick, chief engineer for the district. Thank you all three for joining us today.
Thank you, Julie.
Thanks, Julie.
When we return, we'll meet a Naples resident who's being featured on tomorrow night's episode of We'll Meet Again with Ann Curry on PBS. With the show's help, he was reconnected with a girl that he met as a young boy while the two were refugees in the wake of World War II. I'm Julie Glenn. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.